Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, June 17th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
stocks rebound after yesterday's sell-off on Wall Street.
The S&P 500 enters today's triple witching session at an 18-month low.
President Biden says a recession can be avoided.
And Japan defies a global trend and retains super easy monetary policy.
The final Democratic debate in the primary campaign for New York governor is over, plus another mass shooting in a church in Alabama leaves two dead. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshower in sports. Ninth inning win for the Yankees, comeback win for the Mets, and the Golden State Warriors have won the NBA championship.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm John Tucker.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are on the rise this morning. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 33 points. Dow futures up 228. NASDAQ futures higher by 124 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 3/32. The yield 3.20%. Yield on the 2-year 3.14%. NYMEX crude is up 1% or $1.17 at $118.76 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed up 90 cents at $18.50.80 an ounce. And the euro at 1.0521 against the dollar. John.
And Nathan, the rise in futures follows yet another sell-off on Wall Street, which saw the S&P 500 close at an 18-month low. It was a sea of red with only 14 stocks in the S&P 500 closing higher yesterday. Lori Brignac, the chief investment officer at Invesco, says with inflation and recession fears front and center, the Fed has its work cut out for it.
Monetary policy was too easy for too long, so they've got to make up some ground here to try to stay ahead of it. So unfortunately, I don't think that the news is going to get any better over the next month for the Fed in terms of inflation.
Invesco Chief Investment Officer Lori Brignac making the comments on Bloomberg Business Week. And catch that program weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Wall Street time.
All right, John. Well, the sell-off has been widespread. In fact, more companies in the Russell 3000, excluding financial firms, are trading below their cash holdings. Bloomberg's Doug Krisner has more.
The total number has surpassed the month-end record set during the financial crisis. Smaller cap firms like those in the Russell are particularly sensitive to the health of the domestic economy. And now, as financial conditions tighten, the concern of a recession is in sharp relief. In the last session alone, the Russell 3000 fell 3.5% to its lowest level since 2020. Even so, writers on the Bloomberg MLive blog say when a company's total equity value is less than its cash and marketable securities, bargains can possibly be found. In New York, I'm Doug Krisner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Doug, thank you. And it could be another volatile day on Wall Street. Today is the quarterly event known as triple witching. The $3.5 trillion options expiration may lead to short covering, and that could bring temporary relief to the stock market.
And meantime, in Asia, stocks tumbled to a 2-year low as traders fear the global rush to hike interest rates may result in an economic downturn. Let's get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, John and Nathan. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index fell to its lowest level in 2 years. The index has dropped every day this week and is down for a seventh session. That's the longest weekly drop since the onset of the global pandemic in March 2020. Japanese shares dropped and 10-year yields eased from 2016 highs as the Bank of Japan's decision to keep its ultra-loose monetary settings unchanged provided limited stimulus as volatility in the yen grows. China and Hong Kong stocks gained, the only markets in Asia in the green. This as Beijing's pro-growth policy lended support to views that their equities will keep outperforming. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thanks. After that Bank of Japan decision, the yen weakened as much as 1.8%. BOJ Governor Haruhiko Kuroda addressed the recent sell-off in the currency.
The recent rapid weakening of the yen is negative for the economy as it increases uncertainties and companies will have a harder time putting together their business plans.
Governor Haruhiko Kuroda, speaking through an interpreter, added a reference to foreign exchange rates to its list of risks following the yen's rapid weakening to a 24-year low this week.
And in Europe, Christine Lagarde has told euro area finance ministers that the European Central Bank's new anti-crisis tool will kick in if the borrowing cost for weaker nations rises too far or too fast. Sources at a meeting in Luxembourg, Lagarde told ministers that the new mechanism will be intended to prevent irrational market movements from putting pressure on individual euro nations.
Well, back here in the U.S., President Biden's weighing in on the economy and saying a recession can be avoided. Let's get the details live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. The president is reiterating his message that the U.S. is in a stronger position than any nation in the world to overcome inflation. And while he says a recession is not inevitable, he acknowledges that Americans are really down on the state of the country. He made these comments in an interview with the AP, his first with a print outlet since taking office. And it took place a day after the Fed executed the biggest interest rate hike in almost three decades in order to cool inflation. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Renita, thanks. Reactions still pouring into Elon Musk's first meeting with Twitter employees. He told staffers they shouldn't worry about changes to their jobs once he takes over, as long as their work is, quote, exceptional. Let's get more in his remarks and his concerns about fake Twitter accounts from Bloomberg's Ed Ludlow.
He said that whether Twitter pursues a subscription or an ad model, he's still concerned about bots nonetheless, and that essentially the goal is to make Twitter an expensive platform, in other words, requiring some form of payment that disincentivizes bot activity.
And Bloomberg's Ed Ludlow says Musk did not address whether he was committed to the deal.
Looking at the pre-market now, John, shares of Adobe are down more than 3% after the company reduced its annual revenue forecast. We get the story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Adobe says its business will be affected by currency fluctuations, seasonal shifts in demand, and the decision to end sales in Russia and Belarus after the invasion of Ukraine. It said fiscal year revenue will be about $17.7 billion. That is a decrease from the company's previous forecast of $17.9 billion. And investors are increasingly skeptical about the dominance of Adobe's line of software for design professions, which makes up about 60% of its revenue. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Charlie. Dow futures up 225 points right now. S&P futures up 32. The Nasdaq futures up 119 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's 6:07 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr to find out what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much. The final Democratic debate in the primary campaign for New York governor is over. U.S. Representative Tom Suozzi and New York City public advocate Jumaane Williams criticized Governor Kathy Hochul's strategy toward gun violence. All of the candidates on WNBC were asked about their vision to improve the state, including Hochul.
Don't bet against New York. We've been down before. We will come back even stronger. We've always demonstrated our resiliency, our tenacity. It's in our DNA as New Yorkers.
Early voting starts Saturday in New York. The European Commission recommended that Ukraine be granted candidate status in a symbolic step on the long path to become members of the European Union. That's according to two people familiar with the matter. The recommendation is significant for Ukraine as it seeks moral support in countering Russian aggression. Lawmakers heard gripping testimony from top aides of then Vice President Pence and President Trump during the latest hearing from the January 6th committee. Rioters came within 40 feet of Pence. The committee now wants to interview the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, Ginny, after new emails were revealed from the conservative activist. Former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin talked about the potential legal outcome.
I think what they're going to be doing is trying to prove each of the seven prongs of their conspiracy. They're saying the president engaged in a seven-part conspiracy. Mm-hmm. The first was the big lie. The second was to replace the acting attorney general. The third was to pressure Pence. The fourth was to pressure state officials. The fifth was to do the false electors scheme. The sixth was the violent mob, and the seventh was inaction when this was going on.
Former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin spoke with Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Sound On. WikiLeaks chief Julian Assange should be sent to the U.S. to face criminal espionage charges. The UK government agreed with the courts in opposing his long-running battle to avoid extradition. Two people are dead and another wounded when police in Alabama say a gunman opened fire at a church in Vestavia Hills. Police say a suspect is in custody. Democratic and Republican senators are at odds over how to keep firearms from dangerous people. Lawmakers said they remain divided over how to define abusive dating partners so they could be legally barred from purchasing firearms. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thank you. Coming up on 610 on Wall Street, time down for the Bloomberg Sports Update, and here's John Stanshower.
All right, John, Golden State Warriors had that run of three NBA championships, five straight trips to the finals, and then it appeared that run was over with injuries and Kevin Durant's defection to Brooklyn. 2 years ago, they were the worst team in the NBA, and yet there were the Warriors last night winning Game 6 in Boston, 103-90, and winning the finals, 4-2. A final where every game was decided by 10 or more points. That had never happened before. Warriors led by 22. Celtics cut the deficit to 8. Steph Curry made sure it got no closer. Curry was amazing. 34 points in the finals MVP. Yankees and Mets both with one-run wins at home. For the Yanks, the win came at the end.
Swung on, hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone to win the game. Anthony Rizzo hit a one-out ninth inning walk-off home run to right center field, and the Yankees beat the Rays 2-1.
On WFAN, a game with a total of only seven hits. The Yanks had to scratch starter Luis Severino. He's on the COVID list, so they used three young pitchers, and together they allowed only three hits. Yankees moved 31 games over 500. Mets trailed Milwaukee 4-1. Mark Canha tied the game, two-run homer, fifth inning. Mets topped the Brewers at Citi Field 5-4. A Canadian, Adam Hadwin, is the U.S. Open leader at Brookline, Mass, 4-under-66. Rory McIlroy's in the group that trails by one shot. Dustin Johnson, part of a larger group that's two back. It was a rough 52nd birthday for Phil Mickelson. He's never won the Open. He's finished second six times, and he's not going to win this year. Shot 78. He's 12 shots behind. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports.
John. All right, thanks, John. Dow futures up 223 points. S&P futures up 33 points. And the NASDAQ E-mini futures 121 points after yesterday's sell-off. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Daybreak brought to you by PPAC Private Wealth Management. PPAC Private Wealth Management knows that a portfolio is more than a collection of assets. It's a path to your future. Visit PPACPrivate.com and begin your financial legacy today.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Well, after erasing about $2 trillion in market capitalization this week so far, S&P futures are pointing to a relief rally after a week that saw the benchmark enter a bear market amid growing fears of a recession. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 32 points. Dow futures up 215. NASDAQ futures are higher by 120 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 6/32. The yield, 3.22%. Yield on the 2-year, 3.15%. NYMEX crude is up 0.9%, up $1.03 at $118.62 a barrel. COMEX gold, little change, down $1.10 at $1,848.80 an ounce. The euro is at 1.0523 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2314. The yen is at 134.79. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash, and now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. The next January 6th committee hearing is on Tuesday. The wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, Ginny, is being called to answer questions before the panel about her role in the effort to overturn the 2020 election. The British government has approved the extradition of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the United States to face spying charges. The European Commission recommended today that war-torn Ukraine should be granted EU candidate status. The Warriors are the 2022 NBA champions. They beat the Celtics in Game 6. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The A's beat the Red Sox 4-3. The Orioles won. The Nationals lost. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is now 6:19 on Wall Street, and we are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Maybe too soon to call an end to America's worst bond market collapse in at least half a century. Let's focus on bonds this morning, as well as monetary policy from the Federal Reserve. Joining us now, Gene Januzzo, the global head of fixed income at Columbia Threadneedle. Happy Friday. What's the risk of an overshoot at this point from policymakers?
I think, frankly, it's pretty high, actually. I think that's the message we got from the Fed and even commentary overnight from the ECB as it relates to the reaction function, which is going to favor attacking demand to bring down inflationary pressures at the expense of the economy. So I think this is a situation where front-end rates are likely to continue to rise and bring forth really what we would consider to be a more meaningful inversion of the curve, where long maturity yields go far below those at the front end of the curve.
Okay, so recession ahead.
Well, we could call it a recession. I think we have to look at what's, you know, already happened and what's already in the price. Many would define a recession as two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. In the U.S., we've already had one of those. And signs in the current quarter point to perhaps consumer demand that, while growing on a nominal basis, is still not keeping up with price increases, so i.e. perhaps another quarter now. And if you look at credit spreads, well, maybe they're not pricing in quite a full recession, but I think that's because credit fundamentals are actually starting from quite a positive starting point. So the question here for the Fed is the trade-off of a shallow recession worth it to bring down inflation? We think in their calculus, they probably think it is.
Well, I got to wonder if policy is even effective when you look at energy prices and, you know, grocery prices. Is that something that can be attacked?
Well, in a way, it's more effective, but it's not because it can bring down the prices of those goods. I say it's more effective because it will hasten the tightening of financial conditions. If you're a consumer or a business, the lack of disposable or discretionary income, that deterioration occurs faster. So you just look, for example, at the 30-year mortgage near 6% now, and if you are a borrower with a 20% down payment of the median home in the United States, your monthly payment compared to the beginning of 2021, just about a year and a half ago, is up 80%, and that's a result of higher home prices, but significantly higher interest rates. Those type of payment shocks are material. And when you layer on the additional costs of food and energy, you know, the tax on discretionary income is significant. That brings forward a recession, which ultimately will result in lower demand across the economy.
Can I get into the plumbing just for a minute? Are there liquidity problems, especially in the Treasury market? Do you see any cracks appearing?
Well, certainly liquidity has deteriorated. We haven't seen cracks that would indicate crisis territory at this stage. And I think that's one of the reasons that the Fed, frankly, limited its hikes or its recent hike to 75 basis points. And we've done the math that if they were to hike a bit more than that at a time, you could be in a position where money, we're talking about money market funds breaking the buck, something we haven't talked about, really financial crisis. Certainly liquidity is poor, and on days like Monday, when there was significant moves on the yield curve, we saw difficulty across the market in moving large volumes of Treasury securities, but it's still a deeper, more liquid market than anything in fixed income, and it's nothing compared to the liquidity challenges we saw, you know, a decade and a half ago.
If I can move to corporates just for a second, especially with high yields, is there a threat of higher defaults ahead? Do you see that?
I think there is. We're starting, again, from a very low default rate and a strong balance sheet position. Companies were not sitting idly by for the last 2 years. They were planning ahead and they were refinancing their capital structures and they were generating flexibility on their balance sheets. And so if we look where we sit today, earnings and leverage are in a good spot, but borrowing costs have risen for companies as well. Just looking yesterday, we were at a point where this morning, about 24 hours ago, the three-year Treasury was a 3.5% yield, which ironically is identical to the yield on the high-yield bond market 1 year ago. So we've moved significantly. So I think, you know, a little bit of further widening in credit spreads would actually make them pretty attractive, even though it would signal that, you know, there perhaps is a recession happening. I think you'd be compensated for what could be higher defaults at that level.
Gene, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Gene Sinuzzo, Global Head of Fixed Income at Columbia Threadneedle. Again, Gene sees a high risk of an overshoot by Federal Reserve policymakers. The 10-year yield right now, 3.21, up 2 basis points. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak, brought to you by Hofstra University's Frank G. Zarb School of Business. Zarb Executive MBA, built for working professionals, can be completed in as few as 11 months. Visit hofstra.edu/gograd.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker.
Hager, we're about 3 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Time for the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by IBKR. Investment advisors switch to Interactive Brokers for lowest cost global trading and turnkey custody solutions. No ticket charges and no conflicts of your interests at IBKR.com/RIA. Up first, U.S. futures are higher as we close out the trading week. Yesterday, the S&P 500 closed at an 18-month low. Markets are rounding off a week highlighted by interest rate increases, including the Fed's biggest move since 1994. Greg Jensen, co-chief investment officer at Bridgewater Associates, says the Fed has a difficult job ahead.
If they're serious about 2% inflation, they're going to have to crack the U.S. economy hard, and it's then going to take the easing to offset that and then the recovery before you see a bottom. So that's a long process. In the end, we think the Fed will blink and choose to sustain asset prices lower than they are today.
Greg Jensen at Bridgewater Associates says stocks may still fall lower because, unlike other bear markets, there is not support from an accommodative central bank.
And two other market notes this morning. Before the opening bell, the Fed chair, Jay Powell, makes welcoming remarks at an inaugural conference of the International Role of the Dollar. Today is also triple witching Friday. The $3.5 trillion options expiration may lead to short covering. That could bring some temporary relief for the stock market.
Well, the yen's weaker this morning. This after Japan retained super easy monetary policy and yield curve control, defying pressure to track a global trend toward tighter monetary policy.
And back here in the U.S., President Biden weighing in on the economy. He says a recession can be avoided. Let's get details live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, John. The president is reiterating his message that the U.S. is in a stronger position than any nation in the world to overcome inflation. And while he says a recession is not inevitable, he acknowledges that Americans are really down on the state of the country. He made these comments in an interview with the AP, his first with a print outlet since taking office. And it took place a day after the Fed executed the biggest interest rate hike in almost three decades to cool inflation. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Renita, thanks. And shares of Adobe are down more than 3% this morning. The maker of software for design professionals reduced its annual revenue forecast. And that's the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. S&P futures right now are up 33 points. Dow futures up 214. NASDAQ futures up 124 points. The 10-year Treasury's down 5/32. The yield, 3.21%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
Well, thanks, Nathan. 6:33 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr to tell us what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much. New York Governor Kathy Hochul faced off against two challengers last night in the second and final televised debate before the June 28th Democratic primary. Hochul defended her record on guns and touting her accomplishments during her nearly 10 months in office so far. On WNBC, the governor was asked how would she bring people to the state, including New York City.
I understand the frustration. I didn't say they're not coming back. I said we want them to come back. They may not be here 5 days, weeks, but we need them 3-4 days at least. And we're starting to see the trends in that direction. So don't give up on us.
Governor Hochul went up against New York City public advocate Jumani Williams and U.S. Representative Tom Suozzi of Long Island. The U.K. government says WikiLeaks chief Julian Assange should be sent to the U.S. to face criminal espionage charges. U.K. Home Secretary Priti Patel rubber-stamped the transfer today, siding with the courts in Assange's long-running battle to avoid extradition. Police in Alabama say a gunman opened fire on a small group meeting at a suburban church, killing two people and injuring a third. The attack took place last night at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in the Birmingham suburb of Vestavia Hills. Police Captain Shane Ware.
The suspect is in custody. I would like to reiterate that there is no threat to the community at this time.
Captain Ware says other parishioners held the gunman down until police arrived. The mob invading the Capitol got within 40 feet of then-Vice President Mike Pence as his security team rushed him away on January 6, 2021. An informant later told the FBI that extremists leading the assault would have killed him given the chance. Those were among the harrowing new details from a House committee investigating the insurrection yesterday. Former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin talked about the potential legal outcome.
It, again, appears that the President of the United States, along with John Eastman, along with Rudy Giuliani, along with Sidney Powell, engaged in a criminal conspiracy to obstruct and defraud United States government.
Former federal prosecutor Zeldin spoke with Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Sound On. The European Commission recommended that Ukraine and Moldova be granted candidate status in a symbolic step on the long path to become members of the European Union. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thank you. 6:36 Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, John. The NBA season is over. It ended in Boston.
Let the celebration begin. With four titles in the last 8 years, the run is not done. The Golden State Warriors, once again, are NBA champions in 2022.
85-7 the game, and San Francisco had the call. Warriors trailed early 14-2. Then they had a prolonged run of 35-8 to go up by 22. Celtics in the fourth quarter got that down to 8, but Steph Curry hit big shots. He scored 34 points. The Warriors won 103-90. Not a single game of the series decided by single digits. That's unprecedented. Curry had actually never won Finals MVP before. He was the easy choice, and with four titles, Curry now has to at least be in the conversation for greatest players in NBA history. Andrew Wiggins was a big help. 18 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, and 3 blocks. Jaylen Brown led Boston with 34. Ninth title for Steve Kerr. He won 5 as a player. Another Yankee win, even when they had to go to an emergency starter when Luis Severino was put on the COVID list. Yanks held Tampa Bay to 3 hits and won 2-1 on an Anthony Rizzo home run. Bottom of the ninth inning, Rizzo drove in both runs, and the Yanks have won 14 of the last 15. The Mets came from 4-1 down, beat Milwaukee 5-4. Mark Canna, 2-run homer. The bullpen, 5 2/3 innings of scoreless relief. Jam-packed leaderboard. They go into round 2 of the U.S. Open today at Brookline, Mass. Canadian Adam Hadwin has a lead at 4-under. 12 golfers within 2 shots of him, including 4 past U.S. Open champions. Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose, and Gary Woodland. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks, John. 6:37 on Wall Street. Time to take a look now at stocks and some of the names that are moving in today's pre-market. And for that, we're joined by Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta. Never been on a cruise. Have absolutely no desire whatsoever to do something like that.
You know, don't let Paul Sweeney let you hear you say that. He said he's not a cruiser either, but this is an entire industry that so many people are addicted to.
I don't get it.
I admit I've never been on a cruise either, but that being said, I don't love boats in general. That being said, that's nothing to do with the stock we're talking about today. Well, I guess it does. CCL is your ticker. Carnival Cruise Lines up just shy of 4%, but it's not the fundamentals that are driving the stock. I really like to look at this particular name in the sector, I should say, because usually when you see a rally in Carnival Cruise Lines and American Airlines, a lot of those kind of stocks, it tends to mean that there is a broad rally. And hey, lo and behold, if you look at the S&P 500, only a handful of names in the red. So to me, this is not just a kind of signal of breath sometimes, the idea that you're going to have perhaps the most riskiest, the most vulnerable names in the green, so then the rest might rally as well. But also, it's a volatility proxy. When you see that VIX get higher and higher, Carnival Cruise Line, American Airlines, keep an eye on those names because that's really used as sometimes a vehicle to play some of that volatility. Let's talk about the tech space, though, which is, I think, in some ways the opposite of the cruise line space. TSM is on my radar. This is Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. This is, of course, the ADRs of it. Remember, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company is the largest chip manufacturer in the world. It's also in the Apple supply chains. If you're looking at chips from cars to washing machines to airplane engines, whatever that may be, odds are that Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company has made a chip somewhere in that production line. So anyways, TSM is your ticker, up 0.9% today. And this comes after some news that they're going to be getting their hands on some advanced chip making tools from ASML, which is a Dutch semi equipment maker company. And that acquisition, I don't want to call it an acquisition, but you know what I mean. Like they're gonna be able to use that technology in 2024. So that's some good news there for those shares up 9%.
And Adobe, what are they? They're blaming the weather or something?
They're not blaming the weather. This isn't an airline that they're just going to blame the weather. Adobe cutting their forecast. They're talking about an issue with summer demand. A lot of those macroeconomic issues
that's
you're
kind
hearing.
Of the weather, summer demand.
Is it the weather?
I don't know.
Those macroeconomic issues across the board that you're hearing, well, those are seeping into Adobe as well. The concern here is that are they going to be able to execute on the areas that they are doing well on? And right now, the consensus, at least from the equity investors, that they might not. They cut their full year forecast, and so Adobe shares are down to the tune of over 3% this morning.
Thanks. Well, you know, you mentioned volatility. VIX 31.97. It's actually lower. And I've heard it has to go to 40 before there's like capitulation. I hate that word, but anyway. S&P futures right now, pretty up 37. The Dow futures up 240. Bloomberg Radio TV Markets correspondent, Priti Gupta. Thanks very much. You're listening to Bloomberg. And, yeah, we'll do the weather. Bloomberg weather from Rob Carolyn. Partly sunny, maybe an isolated thunderstorm this afternoon. The high temperature today, 90 degrees in the New York City area. Clear to partly cloudy tonight. Lows in the mid-60s.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. This update is brought to you by Informatica. In the cloud, your data has the power to do the extraordinary. Manage data across any location in the cloud for accurate and actionable insights. More at Informatica.com. Futures are on the rise to cap off a rough week for stocks. We go right to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
And good morning, Nathan. That's right. U.S. futures are bouncing after yesterday's plunge, with Dow futures up 184 points. S&P's gained 30, while NASDAQ futures are up 122. The U.S. 10-year yield at 3.21%. Gold is down 11. Oil is in the green. And Bitcoin is trading higher by 1%. Japan dropped 1.8% overnight, while most European markets are trading higher by 1%. And back in the U.S. on the economic front at 10 o'clock, the leading index. After the bell last night, Adobe cut its annual sales forecast. And in deal news, Revlon soars 51% in the pre-market. Amid a report, Reliance Industries is mulling an offer. Wrapping things up, American Express was raised to outperform at Robert Baird. Toll Brothers was cut to equal weight over at Wells Fargo. Live from the First of Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Nathan?
Okay, Bill, thanks. To get live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type Squawk on the terminal, S-Q-U-A-GO. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael?
Nathan, thank you very much. According to the January 6th committee, even though conservative attorney John Eastman was among multiple advisors and White House lawyers who told Trump the plan to overturn the election results was illegal, Eastman still aggressively pushed it. He later asked for a presidential pardon. The British government has approved the extradition of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the United States to face spying charges. The Warriors are the 2022 NBA champions. They beat the Celtics in Game 6. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The A's beat the Red Sox 4-3. The Orioles won. The Nationals lost. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. 6:49 on Wall Street. Let's turn to news and science and technology now. The Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report is brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, offering New Jersey's first undergraduate degree in fintech. NJIT is future in the making. Tech-driven, finance-focused. Learn more at njit.edu/fintech. And now here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. Airlines have been working hard to convince passengers it's safe to fly, but they're having a tough time convincing staffers to do the same. Aviation officials are facing an unprecedented labor crunch resulting in long lines, delays, and the cancellation of hundreds of flights worldwide. The severe staff shortage is sure to be a topic of discussion at the International Air Transport Association's annual meeting that kicks off in Doha on Sunday. A new study reveals Delaware is the best state in the U.S. to work in the cryptocurrency industry. Blockchain job site Crypto Jobs List conducted the research. It analyzed factors like the number of blockchain companies per million people, average internet speeds, technology hub ranking, and the number of establishments that accept cryptocurrency payments. California came in second. Massachusetts was in third place. And Elon Musk, who met directly with Twitter employees for the first time since signing that deal to acquire the social network, told staffers they should not worry about changes to their jobs once he takes over, as long, he says, as their work is exceptional. And that is the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. John.
All right, thanks, Nathan. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it is 6:51 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the January 6th panel presenting some chilling details of the Pence escape from the mob on that day. President Biden says recession can be avoided as the U.S. takes on inflation. And President Biden and President Xi of China, a call under consideration amid higher tensions between the two countries. And another shooting. Where are we in the gun bill in Washington? Let's take a deeper dive into some of these stories this morning. We're joined by Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins. You made it to Friday.
Woo-hoo. We both made it to Friday. Congratulations to us.
It wasn't easy. What's the latest? What did we hear from the January 6th panel, the hearings? What's the very latest?
So yesterday's hearing was very much focused on Mike Pence and the pressure that he faced from then-President Donald Trump, as well as his lawyer, John Eastman, to try to invalidate some of the results of the election during the point where Congress kind of tallies up the electoral counts. And this is really supposed to be a ceremonial role. Pence from the start, other White House officials from the start said, look, he can't do this. But he was under a lot of pressure by Trump. And it actually, when that mob broke into the Capitol, they were looking for Pence. And there were some extremists who were leading that riot who planned to kill Pence if given the chance, according to information that the FBI has collected. And Pence came very close. At one point, he was only within 40 feet of rioters as they broke into the Capitol. There's been testimony that Trump at no point tried to check in on Pence. And this, of course, brings us back to that point where there really wasn't any efforts for Trump for a number of hours to really call off these rioters, many who had assembled in D.C. At his request, who had gone to his rally and who felt like he had told them to march on the Capitol. And this is really part of the committee's bigger picture that Trump did try to overturn the 2020 elections. And this point is particularly salient when it comes to Pence, because it shows that Trump was told that his plan would have been illegal, and yet he pursued it anyway.
Now, among those watching, I got to guess, is Merrick Garland. Does this check off a lot of boxes for him and the future path for the Justice Department?
So there's actually a little bit of tension right now between the Justice Department and the January 6th panel. The Justice Department has asked the panel for transcripts and videos of some of the more than 1,000 interviews that that lawmakers on this panel have done. And there's been some conflict in getting that. Also, those lawmakers who are sitting on the panel feel like the Justice Department maybe hasn't done enough at this point. They kind of have these conflicting investigations. And so there are, of course, big questions about exactly what if the Justice Department will move to make any moves against Trump or those within his inner circle. I mean, obviously, at this point, you have seen a number of rioters who stormed the Capitol be charged with crimes, be sentenced, some to, you know, time in prison for the role that they played. And so we are seeing action play out. I think, you know, we still have obviously more to come, both with the committee's public hearings on January 6th, as well as further action by the Department of Justice.
All right. He didn't cause it. You know, it's not his policy that can get us out of it necessarily, but President Biden certainly owns inflation at this point, and more talk of recession. What is he saying at this point?
Yeah, so Biden actually sat down with the AP yesterday, which in and of itself is notable. Biden has not sat down with a lot of interviews for print publications, and he did it to kind of give this message that he thinks that the economy, that they can still avoid a recession here in the U.S. He pushed back against the idea that the $1.9 trillion COVID aid package that he pushed soon after he got into office led to any of the current levels of inflation. He said the economy would have been worse off if they had never passed it, but he also did change his tone on a couple of things, notably really acknowledging that Americans are down on the state of the country. His exact quote was really, really down. And we've seen a recent poll from Morning Consult showing that 3/4 of Americans do not think the country is on the right track. And that's a drop from what we saw. We saw about, it was more like 50-50 about last year. And at this point, confidence is very low. And you're seeing the White House try and combat that. There's really only so much they can do to address inflation at this point, but they're really trying to control the messaging piece of it. You're seeing folks from the administration appearing more frequently on TV. You're seeing Biden hold a number of events talking about what the White House is trying to do to combat inflation. And you know, you actually had several top-level White House officials head over to Congress yesterday and meet with House Democrats and kind of go over, you know, this is our message on the economy. These are kind of the various talking points that we have, and this is what we're really trying to get out there to the American people.
Hey, we were doing one of the sad headlines this morning about this church shooting. 2 dead, 1 hurt, at least. That's the toll anyway. Where are we in the gun legislation? Got about 50 seconds left.
Yeah, so at this point, I think there's a huge question mark over whether a bill is going to be able to get done. You saw senators leave town without anything. They said they'd continue to work over the weekend, but they've talked about that July 4th deadline. And at this point, they only have 3 days left in Washington, D.C. before they are scheduled to leave and go back to their districts. Of course, one of the reasons we're talking about this now is because there were those mass shootings in Buffalo, in Uvalde, Texas. And one has to wonder if, you know, the shooting that we're seeing in Alabama, tragic as it is, if that might lend additional momentum to trying to get something done, even if it can't be done before July 4th, will there still be momentum when lawmakers come back?
All right, Ann. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins. You can read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. And a reminder, you can follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington. Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. After the sell-off that we saw yesterday, the painful sell-off futures right now are in the green. The Dow futures of 193 points. S&P E-mini futures 31 points higher. The NASDAQ futures up 124 points. And in the bond market, the 10-year yield is up 2 basis points, 3.22. Another sell-off for Treasuries. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And just ahead, Bloomberg Surveillance with Lisa Abramowitz, John Farrow today. And for Nathan Hager, I'm John Tucker. You have been listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.